This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk with you for one more hour here on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Gord Ash walks out. Steve Phillips, TSN, TSN 1050 Blue Jays insider, walks in. And I don't know if this is the biggest news of today, but news that has really gone under the radar with all these deals is that this guy to my left, Steve Phillips, is now on Twitter.
Yeah,
this is historic.
That? Yeah.
You were a holdout.
Yeah.
Like, you were never going on Twitter, no. Steve. I remember.
I'm on. It's amazing. I'm on. My agent finally convinced me there was probably something I needed to do, and I have been getting mocked by my kids. They're like, Dad, you don't put a space after the hashtag. I'm like, listen, right? I send you guys text messages. You know that I'm not very good. I don't type all that well, and so yeah, they're just absolutely mocking me. So I actually blocked my kids. Yeah, they're blocked.
Wow.
Yeah, blocked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice move.
Yeah,
I like that.
If you'd come to one of us, Steve, we could have told you mute your kids. That way, they don't know.
Oh.
So if you block somebody, they can see when they log on, oh, he's blocked me.
Right.
You mute them, they can yell into the ether for weeks and weeks on end, and you never see it.
See, now that I'm glad I know that now. I'll have to do that when the next time you tweet at me. I'll have to.
There you go.
Thanks very much.
I don't have the blue check mark.
So you traded me for Gord Ash or Gord Ash for me. Does that make you a buyer or seller in this market? I'm curious.
Oh, just a second. I have to let me call Peter Angelos here and yeah. Just figure out what exactly this means. Do you think Gord's in his car yet?
Because
if he's already in his car.
But how far out of first place is this show?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the question.
There you go.
That's really the question.
All right. So let's get to it, Steve. Generally speaking, the emphasis on the bullpen is really not surprising anymore. And we were talking off air here before we kicked into high gear at the start of the hour. You said there were 17 right-handed relievers.
17 right-handed relievers, and you could throw in more because you look at Tyler Clippard, who was, you know, the Yankees got relievers from the White Sox and sent Clippard back in the deal. And the same thing, the Nationals, they sent Blake Treinen to the Oakland A's when they picked up Doolittle and Madsen. So there is certainly an attraction now to the bullpen. And by the way, there are a lot of really good relievers out there right now that are getting a lot of swings and misses. So yeah, we saw like 17, 18 right-handed relievers, obviously a flurry of left-handed relievers. The Dodgers, in addition to Darvish, picking up a couple of left-handed relievers, Tony Watson and Tony Cingrani. We saw Francisco Liriano move as well. So the left-handed relievers, except we didn't see the most impactful left-handed relievers, Zach Britton and Brad Hand, get moved in any deals.
Well, that's because the Orioles and Padres are going to meet in the World Series.
Yes.
And the joke will be... The joke will be on all of us, Steve.
Yes, I think they're going to make a late run. by the way, the Padres did have their first winning month in 2 years in the month of July. So there's some hope there.
Trending upward. Well,
yes.
Beating up probably on the lowly Giants who have really fallen. So just on that note with the bullpen, are we past the point here, Steve, where we look at relievers as failed starters? Because they're such a hot commodity and such an important part of the game now, with starters topping out at 95 to 100 pitches, and you generally, unless a guy's having a great day, don't want to send a starter out there third time through the order.
Yeah, I think we have. I think we've moved beyond that. You're right. It used to be that you groomed everybody to be a starter, and if they couldn't do it, then you moved them to the bullpen, and it felt like a demotion, right? That there was something less than about being a reliever. I think right now there's an understanding that if you're a reliever and you get left-handed hitters and right-handed hitters out, you're a real commodity, and if you get swings and misses and strikeouts, and we were talking earlier, there are 81 qualified relief pitchers this year that have a strikeout rate of 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. And the 10 years ago, there were 21 such relievers. And you go back to 1967, there weren't any of them. And so we've seen the growth of the bullpen, the impact of the bullpen, and that probably tells us some part of the stories about hitters, not just about pitchers. But velocity has gone through the roof, and we have found a place for throwers, guys who might not necessarily be pitchers, but if you can throw and you can ramp up the velocity, there's a place for you in a bullpen.
So obviously, if we're looking, Steve, at the AL East and how it affects the Blue Jays, the Red Sox add Addison Reed, a reliever that they felt they needed. And the Yankees don't go that way. They go starter. They add Sonny Gray, from the Oakland A's, who's been the Oakland A's for quite some time, is only 27 years old and has time pending on that contract. I mean, looks a little bit like the rich getting richer in the AL East and the old enemies in New York and Boston returning to power in a way that has to scare you a little bit if you're a Blue Jays fan.
Yeah, I think that understandably so, right? I mean, the dominance that those two teams had for a decade, where back and forth there was one or the other, or both of them at the top, was there for a while. Now, you know, the Addison Reed acquisition for the Red Sox was necessary. They absolutely needed to add a reliever. They gave up three good arms in that deal, one of whom throws 98 to 101, the Guerrero kid. Mm-hmm. So the Mets, I thought, did really well in that trade after they had already acquired A.J. Ramos from the Marlins, who could step in and be their closer. I like Ramos better than Reed. The Mets paid less for Ramos than what they got back in return for Reed, so it was a good deal. I think the Red Sox needed to add a starter. I would not be comfortable if I'm them with David Price's elbow, with Doug Fister as my fifth starter, so I'm a little surprised they weren't more aggressive, hoping that you're going to get Price back, considering Rick Porcello hasn't been great, Eduardo Rodriguez coming back from his knee injury hasn't been great. The Yankees, I think, put themselves in a position with adding Jaime Garcia and adding Sonny Gray, and then adding Tommy Canely and David Robertson from the White Sox. They've added two relievers, two starters, and a third baseman. They're in a spot right now, I think, to pass the Red Sox. They quite possibly can do that. So I think Brian Cashman did a terrific job. He paid a price, although two of the three players he traded are hurt and not even playing, the minor leaguers that he sent back and returned to Oakland. So in the end, I thought he did a pretty good deal.
What do you think's happening in Boston with Price's elbow?
I think he's got something going on with the ligament.
Because he said, Steve, back, I don't know, was it spring training or early in the season when he was on the disabled list, if I were 10 years younger, if I was 21, 22, and I have now what's going on in my elbow, I probably would have had the surgery,
right?
Tommy John.
Yeah, he's got
so that
partial,
tells you something.
What I, you know, my experience says, and I stayed in a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I'm a doctor now, too, is that, because when you're a general manager, sometimes you're a lawyer, sometimes you're a doctor, you kind of, you know, you're around enough of it that you know. He's got a partial tear of the ligament in his elbow that he's trying to pitch through. And anything off with his delivery, he's going to feel something in there. And so I think he's just managing it, trying to manage the pain to be able to pitch, holding off Tommy John surgery. That's my experience based upon what's going on with him.
Okay, because you're watching him. And was it two Sundays ago they're playing the Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball? And he was dialed in
right
from pitch one, and he was throwing that fastball inner half to right-handers, jamming them up 95-96. And I couldn't remember, Steve, honestly, the last time I'd seen 96 come out of David Price's hand. It had been at least a couple of years. So I'm thinking back to earlier in the season with all the elbow stuff, and I'm thinking two things. Wow. And how long is this going to hold up?
Yeah.
Or maybe he's over the hump.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. I think what happens is that you let everything settle down, you strengthen the area around the joint, and you try to protect it that way. But when anything gets off kilter with your mechanics and your arm slot changes a little bit, then you get that exposure of the potential pain in the joint and the ligament there. And so they're going to settle it down again, ramp it up again. But where there's smoke, there's fire. And most typically, this ends up in surgery.
So if you were to have rated Boston's need, because Dave and I were talking about this earlier and we got Gord's thoughts. You said, man, I'm surprised they didn't get somebody to sandwich in between Sale and Porcello. And we know they got Reed for the bullpen. Would you have prioritized a starting pitcher over a power bat? Because I'll give it to you, Kreskin. You said before the season, they're really going to miss Ortiz.
Right.
And I think that was understandable. But I don't think anybody could have envisioned the absolute slugging and power outage that they would suffer without him.
Yeah. Yeah. The issue is if you get a power bat, where does he play? Because you're not displacing any of the three young outfielders. You know, you've got the Devers kid at third base. You're not going to do anything. I mean, Xander Bogaerts is really scuffling, which has been a big part of it. Hanley Ramirez hasn't given you what you want, but you got a contract there. You got Moreland and Pedroia. So, I mean, honestly, you'd have to get a third baseman, but instead you got Eduardo Nunez, who's more of a speed manufacturing sort of a guy. So I don't know if they had a place for that. And it's amazing how few offensive players actually moved this year at the deadline. I mean, yeah, J.D. Martinez move, but beyond that, Jay Bruce, who absolutely would be a guy that I think could help a team, most everybody scores runs. Like, look at the offensive production of all the teams that are in the playoff race. They're all high-scoring offenses. It comes down to the pitching. So pitching would have definitely been my priority for the Red Sox. I would have done starter and reliever because I think they need both. And I think you do not want to be the wild card team in the American League. You want to try to win that division because, you know, and ultimately you'd end up playing probably Houston in the wild card game. And you know, they're a pretty strong team. Although, to me, they're one of the biggest losers here at the deadline for not, you know, Francisco Liriano. Look, you added a left-handed reliever, but you were in on Britton. You're in on Brad Hand. You needed a starter desperately. I mean, I don't. Dallas Keuchel was out for 2 months. He comes back, starts Friday. Last three innings, doesn't look real good. They just put Lance McCullers Jr., the number two starter, back on the disabled list. And Charlie Morton, Mike Fiers, John Musgrove are guys you're going to count on in a playoff game? No way. You needed Darvish or you needed Sonny Gray, and they took the position, well, we don't want to overpay. Saying that somebody overpays, that's what the team that doesn't get the player says. Everybody else that gets them says, well, in this time and place, this is the value to us. And for the Astros, you've got a great lineup. This is your window to win. Why would you not go get Sonny Gray, give up the prospects, because he'll be there for the next 3 years, which is where you're built to win over the next 3 years. I don't get it at all.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, Steve. I mean, looking at the Blue Jays now, the guy who's starting tonight in Chicago against the White Sox, Marco Estrada, there were a lot of people that figured if the season went south as it has for the Blue Jays, that Estrada would be the guy they could divest themselves of. And, of course, it didn't happen. He's been having some struggles in June and July after having a pretty good April and May. You know, we had Gord Asch on, Steve, and he said that knowing Estrada as he does, that maybe the idea of the deadline looming, the idea that he may be traded, the uncertainty that's surrounding that, could also be responsible for the fact that he didn't get traded because he underperformed. I mean, have you seen that in players where the idea that they're about to be traded or they could be traded 2 months down the line actually paralyzes them into underperformance?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, everybody's impacted differently by emotions, right? And you know, Estrada is a very deep-feeling guy, very thoughtful guy when you talk to him. And yeah, I could see that being potentially an issue there. What I've seen from Marco is some tentativeness in his approach. That he doesn't throw his pitches with conviction. He's not completely sure. He nibbles with his fastball. And what happens when you get hit around a little bit, you think, okay, let me try to miss bats. Let me throw it out of the zone, see if I get him to chase. But what ends up happening is hitters take the pitch, and then you find yourself in a 2-0-3-1 count where you have to throw it over the plate. And any pitcher that has to throw it over the plate, and he has to throw his fastball on a fastball count, and the hitters know it's coming, and they throw 88, they're in trouble. And so the key for him is always conviction early. Get strike one and expand the strike zone. And I know John Gibbons, the one start that he had, he went out in the first inning to Estrada. And they're thinking, all right, he went out there and he chewed him up a little bit. He said, listen, stop feeling for it. Go at him, surrender the outcome, but you've got to pitch the way that you pitch. And it may be a sense of relief right now because Estrada did not want to talk about the trade market. He did not want to talk about whether he was going to get moved. And there's probably a deep sigh of relief. Now I can go out there and perform. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually picks up his performance right now, feeling a little bit better. And it might actually be the thing he needs to get traded in August during the waiver period. Because if he pitches well, I could see somebody making a push there.
Well, and Scotty was theorizing maybe you could bring him back next year on a fairly affordable deal.
Possible. Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, when a guy underperforms, you know, and he loves it in Toronto, that part he's made real clear, they're going to need some impact in that rotation, and they're going to need some predictability in that rotation. And so a lot depends on if it's Estrada, who's that other guy to go with Sanchez, to go with Stroman, and go with Happ in the rotation.
Steve Phillips is our guest on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. He's TSN's Blue Jays insider. This is the issue that the Blue Jays face, Steve. And it was fascinating that they didn't trade Jay Happ from this perspective. They now have 3/5 of the rotation locked in next year. So this tells me, when you factor in the 7-17% season's ticket price raise that's coming up, this tells me that they are going to sell the go for it in 2018 scenario. So do I then draw the conclusion that Josh Donaldson is effectively by no means traded leading up to the winter meetings or at the winter meetings?
Yeah, that would be my conclusion. I would come up with the same conclusion.
Do you think that's a good idea?
I do. I do. I think, I was out there on Sunday, 47,000 people, the 14th sellout of the season. Now, only 22,000 were left in the ninth inning of the game to celebrate the victory. But it was an ugly 8 innings before that. But yeah, I think that and I've talked about it before, that as an organization, you have a business cycle and you have a baseball cycle. And ideally, you want the two of them in sync. That the better you play, the more money that you make, you can buy more, quality players, and then you keep winning, and then you make more money. And so you got that cycle where they're both kind of rolling at the same time. What the Jays have rolling right now, the business cycle's kind of rolling, regardless of the outcome on the field. And they need to get the baseball cycle back in sync with the business part of it. And so, next year is a critical thing, because if it's another losing year next year, you're going to see the business cycle fall off a bit. People will become a bit more disinterested. It may already start a little bit going into the next season, where people are going to say, I need you to show me what you're going to be before I buy. So they're in this area where they need to really step it up for next year, but they're going to have some financial flexibility to be able to consider that. And I think absolutely Donaldson's part of that. So I think it's the right move.
Okay, so I'm going to take you down the path that, understanding that business and baseball don't always match up. Let's, for the sake of being hypothetical, shelve the business talk for a second and stick strictly to baseball. What, in your opinion, given what they have, both at the big league level and in the minor league level, we know all the top prospects are high A or lower, what is the best baseball strategy to take leading into the offseason and heading into 2018?
Right. So in a vacuum, they could do what the White Sox did. Right. They could trade Josh Donaldson, get the big return. They could trade Stroman, get a big return. They could trade Osuna, get a big return. I mean, it's David Robertson, it's Jose Quintana, it's Adam Eaton in a different regard and different levels of degrees of player. But they could go down that road and do it, and they could maybe build up Biagini, trade Biagini. They might trade Happ and bring back some things in return. And they could try to stock the top part of their minor league system. And with Donaldson, they could probably bring back some major league pieces in return. But then you're hoping on prospects to be right on all those trades. You're hoping on all of them to start to come together at the right time. You've got a free agent class coming up in 2019, 2020, 18, 19, and 20 that's pretty impressive free agent classes that your young players aren't going to be ready to compete by then. And at that time, by the time they're ready in 2020 to compete with your young players, a lot of those premium free agents are all going to be locked up and signed long-term with other teams. I still think that in a vacuum, I get the idea of rebuilding, but I don't think it's the right time and place for the Jays to do it.
Well, and that seems to be the way they're leaning, right? I mean, there's no indication that they're about to do that, is there, Steve?
No, I think there's no question Ross Atkins put his money where his mouth is. The Francisco Liriano trade, bringing back Nori Aoki, who they have under control for next year, and bringing back Teoscar Hernandez, who's a young outfielder that's, major league ready at 24 years old. Like, they got guys to compete in 2018, which is exactly what they said, that they were going to put themselves in that position. So I think it completely reinforced the message they've been sending. Their actions kind of paralleled that. And so I think it's worth trusting their word, because I think they're saying they're doing what they say.
Yeah, I just wonder, knowing how they operated in Cleveland, I just wonder if they, I'm not doubting their full investment in this, Steve. That's not what I'm questioning at all. I just wonder if they had their druthers, if they'd like to more put a more stronger stamp, their own stamp on this, this
look,
organization.
I don't think there's any question that in a vacuum, it's easy to look at it and say, you know what, let's tear it down, we'll rebuild it all over, start all over again, everything else. And maybe in a different market you can do it, but based upon where they were, where they're coming from in the last couple of years, and where they are right now, it's you don't make these decisions in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You got to take everything into account, and you still look at it. They've got a solid core. If they had added Jay Bruce in the outfield in the offseason, where I thought that when they replaced Batista and Saunders, I thought that Saunders would not be Pierce in a platoon, but it might be a big guy like Jay Bruce. We heard his name in trades. Jay Bruce got off to a huge start to start the season, having a really solid year. He might have weathered the storm without having Donaldson early to be able to have won some more games, to have some offensive momentum, and at-bats would have been different. So, you know, there's, to me, if they had added another bat, big bat, I think it might have been a different season.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you, Steve. There's no question about it. But so you talked about market, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, because we've seen those two Chicago teams. Theo Epstein did it when he took over in 2011. They lost 101 games in 2012, 96 in 2013, and they end up getting in the ensuing drafts Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber, which goes a long way toward building that young core that wins the World Series in 2016. And you talked about how the Chicago White Sox have divested their talent for prospects in the last couple of years, and Gordon was just in here saying they're going to be a really good team in a couple of years. There's no doubt about it. But you don't think this market will be, if you sort of articulated that plan as a GM and said, hey, this, like Epstein did in Chicago, hey, this won't be easy. And like the Maple Leafs did here, frankly, with Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock as their head coach, saying there will be pain here. You think it's a tougher sell in this market?
I think that you look at the Cubs, and you know they were the lovable losers, but people went to Cubs games for the event, not for the actual team on the field.
Right.
Right? And so their rebuild didn't actually impact the business plan. People kept showing up for the party. And, you know, there just happened to be a ball game going on the field, but they were there for the party of it all. And then they were able to rebuild it in a way and add to the stadium and add to the experience and everything else. But they're not selling that many more tickets, because they sold even when they were a bad team, because of just it was the Cubs and that was the thing to do to go to the games. The White Sox fan base was lethargic for a period. You know, they won back, you know, a number of years ago the World Series. They've kind of fallen off, and it's a completely different fan base. I think that when you've engaged a fan base, a country, to back your team that had kind of checked out for a bit,
yeah,
you know, it's like, how many punches to the gut Can the fan base take before they're like, you know what, forget it. You know what, every time I get ramped up and I start to believe, you guys punch me in the gut, I'm done with it. You made the playoffs the last 2 years. This has been a down year. A lot go wrong this year. But I still look at it, and why would I think that the core of Sanchez and Stroman and Happ isn't a great place to start a rotation? You've got a young elite closer in Osuna, obviously, despite what happened the other day. And you've got an MVP candidate in Donaldson. And the other part of Donaldson's struggles, it makes him much more affordable to sign to a long-term contract than if he's coming off of an MVP season. So if you look at him and think, I still think he's a really great player, then sign him now, because he's coming off a 240 season. Much better to get a good deal from him, and he understands too that he's going to be 33 when he goes to free agency. It's a horrible age to go to free agency, so it behooves him to get his deal now. And it's the best time to negotiate, because he's not played well. So for me, there's a lot of reasons to engage the two rather than separate the two.
What kind of term would you give him? To me is more fascinating than dollar.
I might give him a 6-year deal right now, but that's buying out year six. And then
five of free agency.
And I think you might engage him to buy into that, because if he goes to free agency at 33, he's not likely to get a 7-year contract coming out of that. Would somebody give him a 6-year? All depends on whether he has a monster season next year. And does he want to take that chance of potentially walking away like Batista did, of the potential, you know, dollars that might be there to try to blow up the market for $30 million and $150 million, you know, $30 million a year for 5 years? I think you might find a fairly reasonable guy coming off of a 240 season when he remembers what he was and thought he might be designated for assignment. He rebuilt himself, but this year's got to remind him about the mortality of being an athlete.
Yeah, and he would have learned something from the offseason last year, watching his buddies Encarnacion and Bautista struggle the way they did to get the contracts they wanted, and other power bats in their mid-30s going through what they did.
Yeah, Steve Simmons wrote the story, and I agree with him. I'd sign him.
I want to circle back to our conversation off the top about how you feel the Houston Astros fell short today. I'll say this for the Chicago Cubs, Steve. If you go around the diamond, you see a position player who is locked up long-term, either because he's young and controllable or because he's Jason Hayward and he's got a monster contract. They've got each and every position around the diamond set up through, like, what, 2020?
Right.
2021?
Yeah, at least, yeah.
So they'll trade Jimenez as part of the Quintana package, or they'll trade Candelario for a reliever in Justin Wilson to Detroit this morning. They don't have any more top 100 prospects in baseball. They used to be stacked with them.
Right.
But Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer can look at that and say, nope, these prospects are assets to be moved because our team positionally is essentially set.
Right.
Right? Houston, looking at their lineup, should they not have approached it the same way?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. Because what ends up happening is that all you do is get backlogged in your minor league system with prospects who have no hope of playing on your major league team. And that ends up having such a diminishing return when guys don't have that reason to hope that they're going to get a chance at the major league level. And so, and then what you end up doing is you end up trading JD Martinez and giving up on him, and he turns into a rock star, right? I mean, he's like the hottest commodity in the world right now because you missed on him because you didn't give him that opportunity to figure it out at the major league level. I look at it and think, what is sustained success at the major league level for a small market team? We just experienced it with the Kansas City Royals. They came close in 14. 15, they win the World Series. 16, they're not there. And this year, this is their last year, right? Moustakas, Kane, Hosmer, all free agents. They're going for it this year. But after this year, they're done. They're going to have to rebuild all over again. The Astros are the Royals from several years ago. This is your window. How do you not go for it right now? Because you want to protect some double-A prospect. Prospects get general managers fired. And you know, you need to win championships. They're not in an area with their payroll that they can be like the Dodgers, who have a belief, we don't care about building to win a World Series. We believe that if we win the division for 10 consecutive years, at some point when we're in the playoffs, we'll win a World Series. That if we get there, it's a crapshoot, we'll try to win. That's the Dodgers mentality. The Astros don't have that long of a window, and they don't have that kind of payroll to pay around their mistakes. They have to go for it right now. I thought it was a major whiff on their part, not adding a starting pitcher.
So what's next? I mean, you've been on Facebook Live, you've been on SportsCenter, you've been on .ca, you've been on TSN 1050.
Yeah, I'm
kind of two or three more stops before dinner, don't
I'm
you?
I'm jonesing to tweet right now. This Twitter thing is so cool.
And your kids won't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. They're blocked.
Steve Phillips, what's the handle? I did follow
at
you.
At Steve Phillips GM. At Steve Phillips GM.
Perfect. All right. At Steve Phillips GM on Twitter. Give him a follow now. Great to see you. Great to do this in studio.
It was fun. A lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
All right. TSN 1050 Blue Jays insider Steve Phillips and our baseball insider brought to you by the Oakland Ford Lincoln Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville. Dave Festchuk and I back with more Overdrive in a moment. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app.
Francisco Liriano and Joe Smith were great members of the organization and certainly had significant impacts. And now we have four players with different years of control, with different upside at different positions that we didn't have yesterday.
Voss Atkins addressing the media for about 20 minutes earlier this hour, breaking down the non-waiver trade deadline. So Francisco Liriano is an Astro. Joe Smith is back in Cleveland. The Blue Jays get Nori Aoki in the Astros deal and a few prospects, three prospects combined in the Houston and Cleveland swaps. So we'll see where it all goes. But clearly at this point, the Jays are shelving all hope for this season, and as well they should. They have not played well enough to contend. And, Dave, we haven't even talked about this. Troy Tulowitzki's in a cast. Now, if there's a metaphor for the season he's had, that's got to be it. He's got an injury history, we know it. He rolls his ankle the other day, and I can't see him coming back this year. And even if he's ready in mid-September, why would you bring him back?
Yeah, and that's a problematic situation for the Toronto Blue Jays, right? To have a guy at shortstop earning that kind of dollar, age 32, who's now finding himself at a moment where, you know, injuries continue to crop up, and this one seems worse than any of the ones that have come before it.
Yeah. What has he got? 40 plus 40. He's got $58 million guaranteed to him starting from 2018 into 19, 2020, and then the buyout on the option for 2021 is $4 million bucks to cap out at 58. So I mean, I just don't see this guy going anywhere. And you know, it's one of those deals. If you actually were able to ship him out of town, it would be a lot like Reyes for Tulowitzki. You'd be having to take on money going back in order to get rid of Reyes and improve that position. You know, or in order to get out of Tulowitzki's contract, Colorado had to eat Reyes' salary.
Exactly. You know? And is this a situation very similar to Jose Reyes where you're going to have a guy occupying shortstop, you know, a fairly key position in the game of baseball, who you can't ask to not play shortstop because of the unwritten rules of this ancient game where you don't disrespect a guy of that stature, even if he is clearly on the decline, both offensively, which we've seen has been dismal, and defensively, which used to be his marquee, absolute lockdown situation. So you got to hate it on both ends, and you have to wonder, you know, what is the escape route from the Troy Tulowitzki deal?
Right. Well, he has the greatest fielding percentage in the history of shortstops in Major League Baseball. But here's where fielding percentage is the foolhardy defensive stat in this day and age. That accounts for successful plays made versus errors, right?
Right.
And if you don't have any more range, you can make the plays on the balls you can get to, but those balls that are three or four extra steps to your left or three or four extra steps to your right, they're now going for base hits. 3-4 years ago, he would have scooped them up and made the play at first base. Doesn't happen anymore. So his zone ratings and whatnot are way, way down, and that's hugely problematic for him. Steve Bartman is back in the news. I'd love to know how the peace accord got struck here. My sense is the Ricketts family just chipped away. Anyway, the Cubs are going to give Steve Bartman a World Series ring. I think this is, for Bartman, a really nice thing. I don't know, Dave, if it makes up for the decade plus of hell that guy's life was put through after that 03 NLCS game where he... Some people believe he interfered with the fly ball down the left field line. Whether he did or he didn't, the response wasn't appropriate.
No, it wasn't. If you saw the 30 for 30 documentary that ESPN did about his life since that incident, you know that it hasn't been fun for this guy. It's been very tough on him and his family to be, you know, a pariah, a guy who was blamed for the extension of the curse that hovered over the Chicago Cubs until the World Series in 2016 went their way in Game 7. So this is just a great story. This is a franchise doing exactly the right thing to a guy who was wronged, you know, by stupid fans, really.
Media, too.
And media. And
helicopters flying over his house.
Yeah, there's no question.
Stuff.
No, the media had a big part in it. And I've really respected the way Steve Bartman has handled this situation. He never tried to profit from his fame, which I think would kind of be the American entrepreneurial impulse, right? Well, you've made my life hell. I'm going to at least get rich off this, right? And I'm sure he could have become, you know, at least modestly wealthy off his fame or infamy for that matter. He said on a statement after receiving this ring that essentially said, I won't be doing interviews. I really don't want any more attention. I'm very grateful to the Chicago Cubs for, you know, giving me this ring and including me back in their family and embracing me and letting me know that I'm a valued member of the Cubs family, but I don't want to talk about it. And you know what? As much as I'm in the media, and everybody in the media would love to have an interview with Steve Bartman, I respect Steve Bartman for, you know, laying down the ground rules of how he wants to live his life very quietly, and you know, all power to him, and great on the Cubs for making this happen.
I'd love to know what his life is like now. Because he'd be, would you even recognize him? I can picture him in my mind clear as day,
yeah,
right now on that play. But 14 years on, would you even recognize him if you were walking down the street and if you didn't know his name? Did he go all Dallas Keuchel and grow a beard? Who's trying to go incognito? He became infamous in that city. And it was totally innocent, because I'll always go back and say, ex-Jays shortstop Alex Gonzalez. Dave, if Gonzalez turns that tailor-made double play, yeah, the hitter after, the Cubs are out of that inning, and Steve Bartman is a complete and total afterthought.
Well, and there's so many other additions to that argument, which were like, by the way, this happened in Game 6. They also lost Game 7, right. And he had nothing to do with it.
So. Dusty Baker kept Mark Pryor in exactly. too long, on and on and
it,
on.
It, you could have listed off a million things that exonerated Steve Bartman of any responsibility for their inability to win a World Series until 2016. But all that being said, no, I wouldn't recognize him. I mean, we only know him as the guy in the Cubs hat and the earphones.
The Walkman.
The Walkman, yeah. And the sweatshirt. And people went out for Halloween as Bartman that year, or maybe it was the year after, because it was probably after Halloween. But and we know he was famous and infamous, but we don't know Steve Bartman, and he's never let us know him. And I think that's for the best. And I just think it's great that the Cubs have given the guy this nod and said, hey, like, this is the end of it. Like, here's your ring. Thanks for being a fan. Sorry for the trouble that our curse caused you.
Coming up on the other side, Dave and I. Well, we can sit here and tell you that the Maple Leafs are Canada's most popular NHL team. Send a tape of that to Winnipeg. That'll go over well. They're gaining traction south of the border. We'll explain next. Overdrive with Scott MacArthur. Dave Festchuk continues in a moment. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, Overdrive, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. And it's time now for today's Best Bets, brought to you by Proline. I'm on the Yankees at home over the Tigers tonight. Luis Severino over Michael Fulmer. I like the Rays on the road in Houston, and I think Marco Estrada steps up for the Blue Jays tonight against the lowly White Sox. Take the Blue Jays as the visitor in Chicago. Throw down $20. This ticket will pay you $82.20. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game. So we know the Leafs' popularity in Canada, Dave. Auston Matthews is churning the popularity south of the border. Word today. Like, we knew they were going to be on NBC once, right? With the Stadium Series game against the Capitals in Maryland, right? In early March. Well, the Leafs are actually going to be on NBC three times this year. They've got a date with the Blackhawks on Wednesday night, January 24th, and a date with the Sabres in Buffalo in March. The Oilers and Connor McDavid will also be on NBC three times this year. So a little love for the Canadian teams from NBC and NBCSN.
And why wouldn't there be? I mean,
we've gotten to that point now where McDavid, Matthews, you got to market these guys.
Well, why? And who? If you're watching out-of-market NHL games, I mean, who do you want to watch other than Connor McDavid? And if you happen to not be living in Toronto and you want to watch an out-of-market game, who do you want to watch other than Connor McDavid or Auston Matthews? I mean, the list is pretty short of guys you'd rather watch, in my opinion, in this league. And so, and then you add on the fact that Matthews happens to be a red, white, and blue American boy. That doesn't hurt either.
Yeah. I mean, he's the star. And I mean, we'll see if he can pick up where he left off heading into his second season. I know there's some people who have concerns about sophomore jinxes with this guy, but
who are those people?
To me, they're, until we see it, Dave, until we see it, I'm not going to believe it.
I got news for you, Scotty. We're not seeing it.
Yeah, and you know what? He doesn't have to score 40 in his second year.
No.
If he scores 30, 35, he becomes that complete two-way player, even more so. His game grows in other areas. He becomes harder on the face. Like, I'm really eager to see the steps that this guy's game will take. We know the offense is there. The pickpocket ability, turn on a dime. This guy is an uber talent. I'm eager to see kind of those little nuances improve in his game.
Well, he talked about the last thing he said before he headed out for the summer in the Leafs locker room, hanging out with a handful of reporters, was that he wanted to work on his explosiveness. He felt like he could maybe have an opportunity here because he's only still, by the way, 19 years old.
Right.
I mean, there still is that window where you can improve your explosiveness, improve your strength, you know, until you become sort of peaking in your early 20s. So imagine this kid, who's already, to my eye, pretty damn explosive, becoming even more explosive. And then maybe, you know, honing those skills a little more. I mean, he's uber skilled, as you said, and we all know he can play keep away with the best that have ever played keep away in this league, not to mention take away in that Pavel Datsyuk kind of way. So it's going to be so much fun to watch. But the idea that this guy's going to have a step back season, I think, is he's not that kind of athlete, man. This guy is driven, and he is an absolute A-grade talent.
We're going to talk a little more about this tomorrow because we're pretty much out of time. But I'd be remiss with all the Major League Baseball trade deadline stuff. We just there wasn't a lot else we could get to today.
Yeah.
I had never been to a Toronto FC game until yesterday, and I picked a pretty good one. I mean, a 4-0 win over New York City FC, and NYCFC came into that game 3 points back of the Reds for top spot in the Eastern Conference. So it was a big game.
You know, yes.
a win for NYCFC, and they pull even with the Reds. Well, that didn't happen. It went completely the other way. The atmosphere at BMO Field, it comes through on the TV. You appreciate it, but when you are in that stadium with the Red Patch Boys, with the inebriati right behind the net there at the south end of the stadium, if you haven't lived it, it's an opportunity to experience. This is one hell of a soccer team. Javinko is one hell of a player. First goal of the game off the wrong foot, hooks it inside the far bar. I tell you what, man, I will never sit here and claim to be a diehard soccer fan. I don't think I'll ever get to that point. But that is awesome bang for the buck. And that is a team that is deserving of more coverage in this city.
I can't disagree with you. Every time I've gone down there, I've found it endlessly entertaining. The atmosphere is the best in the city, right? Like the dome is disappointing, even if the team's really good.
It's tough too. Baseball's a different game, yeah. But also with that, not so much of the noisy tradition, and they play every day,
right?
But you're right.
It's just the best venue in the city to go watch sports. I mean, and that fan base is a big reason for it. There's no question. Then the setting's great too. I agree with you. And this is just a flat out great soccer team. I mean, this is a dominant team. We haven't seen a lot of dominant teams in this city in any sport for a long, long time. So the idea that these guys are just absolutely running roughshod over the league, they haven't lost at home yet in 11 outings, it's awfully impressive. And I think, you know, this is a moment in time that you have to capitalize on if you're Toronto FC. And it's nice that they finally dragged you in. What has it been, 10 years? 8 years? I don't know.
2007, yeah. Right? So it's been a full-on decade.
10 years, and Scotty finally rolls up and says, I'll give this a try.
When they made the MLS Cup, and I'm watching the two-leg showdown with Montreal Impact and then the MLS Cup final against Seattle, I said, I'm going to a game.
You did.
Now, I wimped out because I said, I'm waiting until the weather gets good. So
seems smart.
But I think I'll be back this year and probably going forward. You can't beat it for experience.
No, it's an intriguing league, man. Even Atlanta's drawing. Atlanta in this league is drawing.
Dave Festchuk and I back tomorrow for Overdrive at 4 o'clock. Naylor and Landsberg starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Stay with us, TSN 1050.